Two Dimension Comics, episode 50.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Two Dimension Comics, the podcast with no direction. And this is the big episode 50. It's the one you've been waiting 49 episodes for.
Woo!
Yeah! Woo! Woo! We're going to have a rotating cast this episode. We got a lot of people that are in on the action. So for this first segment, we're going to have the core group. So it's me.
And me.
And Al.
Me.
That's Don Allen Rook. If you guys didn't know,
50 episodes, we're still professionals.
Yeah. And the sound quality hasn't gotten any better yet.
Oh, it has. It's better than those like shows with the
crackle. Oh, when like Al and I would just Skype, but my Skype didn't work so well, so I would have the speaker up next to the microphone.
Yeah.
Nobody knew about that until just now.
Or the shows where you had to redub them, you know? Like.
Yeah. This is the behind the scenes episode where we tell everybody how much we actually really suck.
We really don't know what we're doing. We're so happy y'all are still listening. One particular in particular, John Richling. Thank you so much. We love you, brother.
Thanks, John.
And I also want to have a shout out to Jean Wallace as well, because she's another one of our core listeners that has been with us through the entire thing. So thanks to you, Jean.
Well, as a matter of fact, we've got 1,506 comments.
Really? Where? Wow.
Guess how many are real?
But 35 of them are Jean, and the rest are all spam.
Hey, one of those is me.
Well, we've got something like 41, but
masquerading as your wife.
Jean.
Hey, I masquerade pretty well as my wife.
That wouldn't be so disturbing if it wasn't so damn hot. So how's everybody been, guys?
Good.
I haven't seen Rook in a while.
Yeah, everything's been good. How about you guys? You
know?
Been good. We finally got our website straightened out. If Dallas could talk about it, if you can get the dog.
Oh, we might as well, but hold on. Rook's dog is jumping all over my deal. All right, before we get into it, then, let's talk about our website. It's finally up and running completely, so you can go to it and not have to worry about going to our blog and then, you know, hotlinking over to our actual site and going through all that BS. So go to bunchofdorks.com and
click on the Cyclops.
That's all you got to know. Click on that Cyclops, and it'll take you directly to our site. You can find all our episodes, all our show notes, all our links, just everything. It's great. There's a ton of crap there. Don puts it together and he does a fantastic job. He's high-fiving himself right now. So, being the Gala 50th episode, we have a lot to talk about, and the majority of it's going to be craziness later on. So before we get into that, how about we talk about the books that we recommended to each other on episode 48?
Works for me.
You all right, Al? Tyrion's going crazy.
He's sniffing my shoes. I hope I didn't step on
something. I really jinxed myself with this dog. You know, I had to name him Tyrion after Tyrion Lannister from Game of Thrones, and I ended up with the biggest dick of a dog ever. You know?
He's a nice
just,
dog.
He just... Oh, really? Yeah, now he's licking your crotch. Yes. Go.
Tyrion Lannister,
ladies and gentlemen.
All right.
Okay.
So,
so who wants to begin?
Yeah, who wants to start?
Well, I know we're all just dying to find out. Rook.
All right. First off, before I get my balls busted, because I'm only 6 or 7 issues in right now. Again, I went back and I totally restarted from zero. Okay?
And what was it that you read again?
I finally read Miracle Man. Okay, I
took. Yeah!
Yay!
Yeah!
All right,
I took a serious and honest look at the book and started reading it. Okay, I apologize. I've not gotten further because I have been really sick the beginning half of this week. Be happy we weren't recording last weekend, because this was like the House of Plagues. But, you know, Miracle Man, one of the first things I want to say about this book is how amazingly, you know, kind of campy it starts out, you know? Yeah. Very kind of, you know, almost pop comic, you know, very... And it just keeps getting darker and darker, you know? Just really, really cool stuff. I gotta say, I'm a jackass for not reading it sooner. I only have one problem with the book, and that's it. It's like such a Shazam ripoff.
Well, yeah.
But, so,
we talked about this in the past because I was shocked. I started reading this in 1985, and I couldn't believe, like you said, what a ripoff it was. But the whole story to that was they were doing Captain Marvel reprints in England, and they were hugely popular. Well, when National Periodical, or DC Comics, sued Fawcett over Captain Marvel, and they shut down publications, there was no more Captain Marvel. Well, the British audience was demanding more, so the publisher went and hired Nick Anglo's studio, and he created Miracle, or Marvel Man. So even the name was, taken from it. And they had the comics, I guess, is in the 50s, and it just continued to go on. So yeah, it is a cat. I couldn't believe they got away with it.
Yeah, it does. It's really kind of shocking that they were able to get away with this and not get the crap suit out of them for this.
Well, there was along those same lines. Captain Marvel was initially a reaction to Superman.
Right.
Right, and so that's what happened. And then Marvel Man was a reaction to Captain Marvel, but I think there was a big lawsuit that was pertaining to Superman and Captain Marvel at one time, wasn't there?
Yeah, there is, but what gets me is I see this all the time now. And when John Byrne started doing solo work and independent work, it was the same thing. He did the Next Men. I mean, what was that based off of? Come on. And then he had Mystery Incorporated or something. It was a Fantastic Four analog. He had the Torch of Liberty, which I thought was pretty neat. He was in Hellboy, the first issue, but it was Captain America. But he basically had analogs to all the Marvel characters, and they didn't scratch, they didn't do anything. And I see that all the time. People now have all these series that are based off of Marvel or DC property, nothing happens. But yet, way back in the past, they shut down Captain Marvel.
It's interesting. I'm really tearing through trying to read the rest of the book. Now, I have one quick question, though, because I was looking at stuff, and I want to get a quick answer on this. I noticed in the stack, as I'm looking through, there's Miracle Man number 1 3D.
Yeah.
Does this fall into continuity anywhere
no,
in particular,
no.
Or can I read that after
issue
15?
Yeah, you can
15?
Read it. I think that's just old a Marvel Man story.
It's reprints of the old Mick Anglo stuff.
Yeah.
Okay.
What happened was Eclipse Comics, the company that were doing this, they had a big flood out in California in 1986, which I guess basically they never really quite recovered from, I'm told. But it threw all their books off schedule. By this time, they finished publishing all the, I think the first five issues finished the whole British run, up to Alan Davis. And I think, Chuck Austin? I think was the one that did the next issue, but that was the first of the American artists. And in between all that time, they didn't have anything, so that's when they put out the Miracle Man 3D special.
Okay.
And I just threw it in there because it's part of it. I bought it, and I was a little disappointed that what this isn't new stuff. But
Okay. Yeah, I wanted to see if I should read that at a certain point or not. So that's good to know. All right. Excellent.
But no, the first five issues, if you like those enough, then you can continue on. But like I said, when that stuff was going on, I was kind of shocked. It was always questions I had. Al and I were joking about Captain Marvel Jr. Captain Marvel was crippled. He was a crippled orphan kid. And I thought, well, why would he turn back to that if he could be Captain Marvel Jr.? Well, in this one, it answers that question, what would happen? And there was just certain things, like Mike Moran was talking to his wife about dealing with the fact that, Miracle Man was almost a separate person.
Right.
And that was, I think, my favorite part of the whole series is when he's talking to his wife saying that he's just so pure. And she goes, what do you mean? He says, well, when I'm with you and we're making love, I'm also thinking I'm kind of mad because you didn't do the dishes and I got stuck with it. This is not that it's horrible things. It's just human things. But when he makes love to you, it's pure. All he's thinking about is her and her pleasure, and that's it. And I thought, I never would have thought of those kind of things,
Okay.
And it's just stuff like that all the time. I even now, every time I'd get one issue, I'd read it. Man, this is the most incredible thing I ever read in my life. And then, at one point, it seemed like it kind of lost direction a little bit. And like Dallas points out, the last couple of issues, some of the stuff he put in there, I'm like, oh, how did he come up with this? You know, it just, it wasn't what I would have thought of.
Gets good.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I definitely look forward to reading the rest of them. So.
Oh, cool.
And now to Al, I must apologize to you.
Yes, that's
my,
fine.
Yeah, we've already discussed this. My computer just
didn't like the files.
Yeah, didn't like the digital copies that you gave
me. Okay, that's
so
fine. I have a hard copy that I'll bring in.
Excellent, excellent. So I'll get a chance to talk about that in a future show then.
Nice. All right. Who's next?
I'll take it.
All right, hit it.
All right. Well, I'm going to talk about the Swamp Thing, the anatomy lesson. Okay, I read that book when it came out. What was it, 82 or 83?
Yeah, something like that, 83.
You know, I have mixed feelings about this book, because this book's a game changer. This is when, like, things started to change in comic books, and I have mixed feelings about it, because, you know, there were dark comic books before that. I mean, Swamp Thing was, there was a Michael Fleischer, Spectres or whatever, but this thing was, like, the beginning of, like, really, really...
It was
literate,
like,
darkness, real hard of darkness kind of stuff.
Like a psychological horror.
Psychological
is what it's called,
horror,
right?
Yeah. And it was like rereading it again, I was like, this is completely different from anything I remember reading before. You know, it was like, I mean, the creepy and eerie stuff was pretty damn dark too. But it was also like an only a 5-page story, you know, so it was kind of like, okay, they got into some weird crap, but it was over quickly. But this kind of like, you know, and it really is rebooting Swamp Thing, because it was like, it was a complete change of the character or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, it was kind of like, it actually brought back memories of, like, I remember being at a comic shop in the 80s and some guy going like, wow, I read this book and this is like really good, but it's different, you know, and I'm like, wow, okay. And then I read and I'm going like, yeah. So I did buy all the other issues up to a certain point or whatever, but yeah, yes. It was definitely like a different book for the time. I mean, that was the first Alan Moore American comic book, I think.
I think it was.
It was.
It was, yeah. And it was funny because I never put Alan Moore that early on because I just forgot about it. But I remember seeing some pictures of him and Jack Kirby at a convention. I'm going like, that's weird. You know, I forgot that Alan Moore was really around in 82 and Jack Kirby was still around and all those other guys were still running around.
Well, Alan Moore was doing a... V for Vendetta, Marvel Man, all that stuff for Warrior Magazine.
At the same time.
But that was...
81 and 82.
That's right. Yeah. But that was the UK, so...
It was, but the magazines were in a lot of places here in the United States. They had an audience here.
They were like in stores, but they weren't in comic shops. Some of them. I couldn't find them in comic shops. I remember seeing them at supermarkets,
believe
it or not.
Well, in the great state of Texas,
you could.
Okay. But no, my friend Britt read them. I wouldn't touch them. Every time I'd see them, for some odd reason, they just didn't look like books I'd want to read. They looked like bad 50s British, you know, thug stuff, which is silly to say now because some of my favorite books, but, you know, you can't judge a book by its cover.
That's how I felt whenever I'd see, like, the old Judge Dredd stuff when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Like, ooh, what is this? It looks terrible.
Yeah. Well, that's how I always used to judge the Hellboy stuff. I would always look at that and be like, oh, God. This art is so horrible.
Yeah, I remember we used to hate Mike Mignola.
Yeah, I hated his art. It was, you know, I considered it, you know, very kind of generic-y, childish art. And looking at it now, I have a much, much deeper appreciation for it. And, of course, the amazing stories written behind it as well.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, so, yeah, definitely. I'm going to finish reading the rest of the graphic novel. I know I have the comics in boxes somewhere, but... It's a lot easier to read the trade paperback, but I may talk about the rest of them too later on, because it was actually like a nice little trip down memory lane there. It's amazing that was like 30-something years ago or whatever.
It's always nice rereading something like that and actually still appreciating it or like rediscovering it and realizing how much you kind of liked it.
I didn't realize that Alan Moore was that long ago, you know?
Yeah.
It's just kind of like, wow, time flies.
One point you made was talk about how dark Alan Moore was, and you mentioned the Fleischer Spectres.
Those were dark, man.
But the difference was, the Fleischer Spectres, I absolutely loved. I was a kid.
I did, too.
I picked them up, and I just thought they were incredible, but they were dark, and they were vengeful, and I mean, they were... But the issue was, it was just those. All the other comics were just comic books. The problem was, Alan Moore always has a tendency to like that kind of stuff. Even my favorite work he did was the Captain Britain work he did with Alan Davis. It was just great, fun, high adventure comics. But he had a dark Lewis Carroll kind of way of writing.
Yeah.
And but that's how Alan Moore worked. And it for some odd, Frank Miller's another one. Frank Miller can write these kind of dark, horrifying stuff, but there's still something in it that it's okay. But the problem was, is after this stuff came out, everybody jumped on and started writing these horrifying things, and it wasn't the same. There's no redeeming value, no natural alkaline to balance it.
That's right.
And the you know, the Michael Fleischer Spectres, if that would have happened then, we'd be hating on Michael Fleischer Spectre. And Jim Aparo, I don't want to forget him. But yeah, when all this stuff came out, it completely changed the game. And I think Alan Moore was very sorry about that. And I think that's why he started doing comics like Tom Strong, you know, Promethea. He was trying to bring back that old feeling, the wonderment of comics and the excitement.
Well, the 1964 stuff, too, you know. Or
oh, yeah, the 63.
That was, like, fun stuff because it was, like, kind of like they were kind of goofing on, you know, the old 60s comics, like Amiable Al Moore and, like, you know, that kind of stuff. Or
like, it was, like, Stunning Stan Lee and...
Yeah. Jolly Jack Kirby and...
Exactly, all that kind of stuff.
So, yeah, it was good stuff. So, yeah, definitely, like, Swamp Thing, brought back memories. Anyway, go for it, Don. Do one.
Is that all you read?
Oh, no, I read everything. Oh, you want me to keep going?
Dude, hit it up, man. Rick only had one.
Now, talking about dark, now we got Rook's book over here, The Ghost Rider. Oh, boy.
It was the Garth Ennis one, right?
Oh, man. There's, like, no... Is there any nice person? Well, no. There was the one lady had a little bit of
a little bit.
Miss Calf, mm-hmm. something or whatever. Yep. Yeah, but oh man, Ghost Rider's in hell. He wants to get it, can't get out. An archangel gives him like a chance to get out. Now, was it did he have to kill Ruth, or was that part of the deal? He had to kill Ruth.
Part of the deal was he had to kill and bring him back to hell.
Yeah.
So.
I see a repeating motif inside of Garth Ennis' early work like this. In Preacher, he's got to kill God.
Yeah.
Ennis uses a lot of those kinds of very heavy religious overtones, you know, kill the deity, kill the archangel, kill the demigod kind of overtones in his work.
Yeah, and it's like, everybody in this book is like, except Ghost Rider. Ghost Rider might be, you know, he just wants to get the hell out of hell, you know.
He's the one guy in the book that's not trying to screw everybody else over. He's just the poor, dumb bastard that's stuck in everybody else's stupid plans.
Yeah.
You know? Everybody else is looking at him going, hey, sucker.
Yeah, because it's like the one archangel, he's really like, in cahoots with the demon guy, and the demon guy's being set free by some fat millionaire who just wants to walk again.
Right.
And it's like, oh my god, but it's kind of like
plans within plans.
It's kind of like, basically what I got from it was like, neither side is any good.
And that's one of the really interesting things that, you know, he approaches, is that, you know, whether heaven or hell, neither one is really on your side. They're on their own side.
Yeah, that's I mean, the art's real nice. Sometimes the art was a little hard to figure out what was going on.
Yeah, it is a little gritty at times.
Yeah, he's like a, I think he was working in airbrush or something like that, and it was a little like that one character, Butthead or whatever.
Oh, God, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, but I definitely enjoyed it, so yeah.
Good,
I guess
excellent.
Thumbs up.
I thought you would.
Looks like the party just got here.
Yeah.
What's up, boys?
We've got some of our special guests coming in.
All right.
Okay,
we're gonna...
Yeah, well, hold on 1 second. I just had a thought.
Okay.
Oh, never mind, I lost it. So what's next?
Okay, Terminal City. This was Don's suggestion. It's a really good book, actually. You know, I was kind of like... Because you were telling me about Michael Larkin. I didn't really know his work that much. So I was like, okay, all right. And I'm like, okay. So I check it out. It's a really good book with some really nice art. This was early art by him, right? This was like the first or second thing he did?
This is the first thing I know of. I'm guessing it is, but they found it from somewhere.
Because I remember Gotham Central. And I actually saw a few of those like at the comic shop the other day. And the art was a little looser. And
well, that came later. The Terminal City was the first thing I saw, and then later I found out he went on and was doing other work. Gotham Central, I think, was the next.
Okay.
And, again, a friend of mine was telling me he's using a lot of bolder, thicker lines, yeah, a little more fluid, and they said he must have discovered Alex Toth. But I think that's actually how he draws. What he said in an interview one time was he didn't feel comfortable doing Terminal City. He says it wasn't natural. Which blew me away because I absolutely love that. And even hearing that when I thumb through the book, it looks comfortable to me. It's just strong, strong work.
Okay, cool. Anyway, the storyline is basically the story of, Cosmo Quinn. He's a window washer in the futuristic Terminal City, which is basically like a futuristic city that kind of like the 40s. There's like radio is just ending, and I think television is starting. And there's like gangsters, and there's like Abbott and Costello like guys, and Three Stooges like guys, and
that's kind of cool. So it's set in the future, but it's almost like a mirror image of the 40s. It's just like an homage to that era.
It's an homage. It's a retro future. There's what was it? There was a mayor, Huxley, and a
like Aldous Huxley.
Yeah, there was like a reference Aldous Huxley and. Oh, what was the other guy? The guy who did 1984.
George Orwell.
Yeah, right. There's references to the Stooges and to everything like that. It's basically the story of a window washer, and he used to be an aerialist, and basically like that died out because they were having accidents and people started like not enjoying it anymore. So robots started doing all the, you know, like the kind of
like the menial labor.
Yeah, whatever, you know, and the aerialist thing started dying off or whatever. Watch out, doggy. Not again. So basically you get his story. He's like the window washer. He's seeing all this stuff going on. There's like people coming in and out. There's like the young girl that comes in.
Yeah, she ends up working for Cosmo Quinn. She came in for something, and it didn't work out. She ends up being his assistant.
When it becomes the human fly. Because he was the human fly when he was an aerialist, right. And then he stopped because that, you know, that kind of died out or whatever. There was, like I said, there were some accidents, and
the whole thing in that strip, it all revolves around, I keep talking about the World's Fair.
And
like I said, as I said earlier when I introduced this to Al, it was a golden age, and everything was just wonderful, and after all these things happen, you start finding out in hindsight about the aerialist dying and everything came apart. One of the, I don't know what you call him, the front men, he was the one who had the evolutionary change.
Yeah, he was an explorer or something like that.
He disappeared. And there was a boxer.
Yeah, that was a good story.
Yeah, well, there was a boxer in the strip, and they keep showing him. They didn't make a big deal about it, but he was basically working as a janitor in the bar. And just cleaning up floors, and you know, but it was like a time that was bigger than life, and all of a sudden reality set in, and it was pretty dim. But the whole view of the future was, you know, whenever you see the future, you see where you're at now. If you watch the original series of Star Trek, they have those big devices, and all the ladies are wearing miniskirts and teased hair, which I really liked, but you know, it doesn't look like that now. And it's the same thing. It was basically, it's the retro future, you're looking back. But what I really liked about the story, even though it was drawn so brightly with this clear line style, was it was just so dim and hopeless when it started. And then all of a sudden, things start falling back into place and everything starts coming back together. It's like there's more hope. You know, I think Cosmo Quinn ends up doing the human fly thing again.
Yeah, he comes at the end and he breaks up like some of the you know, the gunplay and some of the problems, because there's a thing going on with the briefcase at the beginning where it's like got something in it, and then like these gangsters are coming after it, and then at the end when that guy gets killed, the whole story kind of starts all over again because the briefcase is found and some like, you know, guy on the street picks it up. Okay, here we go again with this, you know, storyline or whatever. But it was definitely like a 40s look, but it's like I said before, it's weird. It's a 40s look, but it's a really clean looking art style. So it was kind of like, you know, yes and no, you know. But and like I was telling you, I would have liked it way better if Mike Caluto would have drawn it, because that seems to be like his style, the 40s like buildings and all the, like, you know, art deco and all that stuff. But it's pretty awesome miniseries. So yeah, definitely. And there's a part two, right? Which,
yeah, Aerial Graffiti comes after it, but that's again. Part of me, the way I took that story was that even though it seemed hopeless, it was the people that turned things around. It wasn't events. It was the people that started making a change and, you know, come about. But, yeah, Michael Kaluta would have done a nice job on that. But,
oh, yeah, all the buildings. It's got all these Art Deco buildings and all these 40s-looking things. And, yeah, definitely a good one. So,
all right.
Nice. That's my,
all righty. Who's going next?
Okay, I'll take it. Dallas's recommendation to me was The Sandman, Dream Country. I've never really read Neil Gaiman. He's somebody I hear about all the time. People talk about him. People worship this guy. Dallas has lent me a couple of Sandman books in the past. Whenever I go to a comic store, no matter what part of the country I'm in, I always see people, usually young women, snapping these things up right and left.
Well, you can see how you would confuse me with a young woman.
Wasn't in the Navy that long, dude.
Wow.
But, no, it was good. I really liked it. He lent me, a trade years ago. And it basically told the whole story of how the Sandman had disappeared and came back, explained the Golden Age Sandman, the Jack Kirby Sandman later. I thought it was good, but, I mean, I didn't go gaga over it. The ones I enjoyed was the Charles Vest drawn story about Shakespeare. But when it was finished, no offense, I just kept thinking, well, what was the point of this, you know?
That one's kind of a series of vignettes. It's just four stories that aren't really connected, and they weren't chronological in the series. It's just four random issues that were just kind of done in ones. And it was just to kind of show different sides of Morpheus, really.
Well, it was good. My favorite was at the end of it. It had, I don't know what her name was, but she was in the Metamorpho comic.
Element Girl?
Yeah, she was in it. And that one, I thought, was a strong, strong story. Basically, she was talking about what happened to her, and she was hiding. She just stayed in her apartment all the time. She was being paid by the company. But she was completely out of the circuit. And that one I fell for. That story kind of surprised me. I read it. It was very gripping. But,
Now, does death show up in any of these particular pieces?
Yeah, in the Element Girl one.
Yeah, in the Element Girl one. Yeah.
Because she's contemplating suicide, I think.
No, I read a death miniseries. Somebody recommended it, so I picked it up. It was fine. There was elements of it I liked. As I said earlier, I liked to. Yeah. Now I lost my train of thought. Thank you, Don.
But I'm curious because you said you've seen more younger women picking up his books. And actually, I see the opposite with the Sandman stuff. I see
bunch of old dudes.
I see guys picking up those books, the Sandman stuff. Girls gravitate more from this is just from experience of seeing and being around other readers. I see more girls picking up the death stuff and then moving on to his other books from there.
Well, it could be, but I've just seen people pick up Sandman all the time. But yeah, death is very popular. I've read it, but I'm still...
death is very popular.
All right, all right. Yeah. But one-liners all over the place. No, but I'm still, I guess, I like Neil Gaiman, but I just don't understand the big to-do about him, you know, I mean, but I did like these books, and I especially like the Element Girl story at the end.
Well, I can pretty much be assured that anything that I loan to you, you actually read, regardless of whether you like it or not. I always try and give you stuff that I know you're going to like.
Was that a dig on me?
No.
Was that a dig on me with the Miracle Man stuff?
No. Clearly. But also, I knew I was taking a chance on that, because I didn't know if you'd like it, but I just thought I'd give it a shot.
I'm glad for a chance to read it. No,
like, I'd let Rook borrow it, but he'll never read it.
No, honestly, I wouldn't read that, because I don't like his stuff. I've read a lot of the death books, and, you know, much like you were saying with the end of this, you get to the end of his stuff, and you just kind of feel like, okay, that's the end of that book.
Well, that's
what the hell did I do reading that? You know, you just kind of get to the end of his stuff and you just kind of feel like empty. Like, well, there really didn't seem to be a payoff.
That's how I feel. But there are elements of his stories that I like. Like, again, the Element Girl. There were certain things that he would bring up or she would bring up in it. And I, well, actually, yeah, I could see that. I fell for it. But yeah, it's when it's all over, I'm thinking, well, okay, it's fine. That's nothing wrong with that, but it amazes me that people are just flocking to this guy and going on like he's Alan Moore.
It's the same here. There's pieces of his stuff that it's very interesting. His character designs are amazing. You know, his concepts that he goes into sometimes. but you just get to the end of the book sometimes, and it all the time with everything I've ever read of his, and you just kind of feel a little like, okay, that's done.
Well, at this point, I think he's kind of considered a legend, and whether or not that's
so not
rightfully
like more,
so
you don't
or not.
Feel like you're,
Here's my point. Late 80s, 89, middle 89, when Sandman was released, it was just different enough from the majority of things, because Sandman's pretty mainstream.
Right.
It was released from a mainstream company. It was just different enough from what was coming out from those concurrent releases that people really, people flocked to it. They thought it was great because it was that different. If it was released now, 20, 30 years later, it probably wouldn't have as big of an effect, but because it was so popular in the context of when it was released, people loved it. They kept reading it, and whether or not he should be considered legendary or as popular as he is, who knows. But I think that's one of the main reasons, is just the timing was right, the context of when and where it was released, you know, in the middle of what other comics were.
I can agree to that. He was different enough at his time, but I don't understand how people are still picking this up and going, amazing. I mean, when there's so much other stuff out there, how are people still picking up his books and going, wow, this is
well, I think it's just a matter of taste. We're talking about bands, you know. Yes, and I like Genesis. He likes Genesis with Phil Collins. I like Genesis with Peter Gabriel. He likes Yes with everybody in the band. I only like the ones with Bill Bruford and, you know, basically the ones with Bill Bruford and Rick Wakeman. So it's kind of like, one doesn't make the other one better. It's just
run, dude.
Personal taste or whatever.
Let's just call the whole thing off.
Okay.
Okay, what else you got?
Well, I have one thing on the Neil Gaiman stuff. If you got any more, keep loaning it to me, because I'm really desperate to find out why people are jumping on it, and I figured someday I'll find it. Okay, the next one, Rook lent to me, is Mouse Guard, Fall 1152. A friend of mine got one of these way back and said, this is the biggest thing, read it. And I read it, and I thought, oh, okay, I like the drawings enough, but I didn't really quite understand it. So you can imagine that I wasn't really thrilled when Rook gave me this book. You know, I thought, well, okay, I'll read it. This is the first book I read out of all the stuff I got. And
I didn't think I'd get through this piece of crap first.
Well, no, I wasn't thinking that, but I mean, this wasn't the first thing I'd pick up. Now, my daughter, when they had a free comic day, she'd always grab it. And at one point, she said, you know, I really like Mouse Guard. So I grabbed her a few books, and my wife had seen it. And she said, this is cute. So I went through it. I have to say, this book is meant to be read in chunks instead of the little floppies, which are really nice to get. It's unique design. The guy can certainly draw.
Yes.
I really enjoyed the story, and even though this is the only one I've read, and I see there's a lot of stuff that gone on before, it was extremely interesting. If you ever read about the Knights Templar, the Masons, any of those secret societies, it's in there. It alludes to it. My one complaint to it was I don't like the lettering in this. I know why he put the lettering the way he did.
Yeah, the lettering is definitely a mistake.
But Dallas years ago lent me From Hell, Alan Moore and Eddie Campbell. And at the time I'm reading this, I'm thinking, oh my God, my eyes are going, because I was having trouble reading. And if somebody told me, no, it's just, that was you. So that's Eddie Campbell's lettering.
Yeah. It's his lettering is just like his art, though. It's real scratchy.
So I'm taking it that David Peterson went to the Eddie Campbell School of Lettering. And even though...
That's simulating a font, though, you can tell what he's doing there. It's a little
different. Actually, this is something that I talked to an artist about before, somebody I've brought up on the show, Voltaire. His first comic book, Chichon,
right.
He did the lettering. He actually... wrote the font out and created the font from his handwriting. And when he looks back on his work now, he's like, God, what a friggin' mistake that was. It's so hard to read this crap. And, you know, with Mouse Guard, that was one of the real faults I had with the book, is the lettering.
Well, there's certain parts where he changes the lettering here and there. I thought, well, that's kind of clever, but it's just not working. There's some pretty neat stuff in there. He's got, it reminds me of a book in the 70s, which all of you people, with the exception of Al, is too young to remember. But it was a best-selling book, and it was those garden gnomes that people steal. All you punks go and steal all the time.
I was too young.
What are you talking about?
Anyway.
I just stole Rook's out
that
front.
That was a best-selling book. It was illustrated. I'm guessing these guys are German. But it told the whole story of how gnomes live, like a National Geographic story. And this has this kind of stuff in there where it shows all the mice and, you know, the different tools they use and the places they live. It was great fun. There was a couple of times in there, just the way he draws the strip, that I couldn't quite tell what was happening. Just between panel to panel, sometimes they get a little static. And that's the only complaint, but now I'm starting to understand why this is such a successful and popular strip. And I'm glad it's around, and thanks for lending it to me.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear it.
And
now
Al,
we get to dirty comics.
Al,
would you give him porn?
Yeah, well, Al lent me several books by the artist Jordy Bernay, who followed Alex Toth on Torpedo. And I've seen the work on Torpedo. He's a really good artist. I've never seen any of the stuff that Al has lent to me.
He's a contemporary of Toth?
He's been around since 1960, so yeah, I guess.
He's a European cartoonist.
Spanish cartoonist.
Well, see, I didn't know Spanish, but as I started reading the books, I realized there's nothing else this guy could be. Because in these books, there was horror stories, which were fantastic. I can't remember the other two, but there was one, Sarvina?
Yeah, Sarvina or something like
and,
that.
And she was a jungle girl, which is my favorite one. The guy has a fantastic fluid line. But I, with the exception of Daniel Torres, I think all Spanish artists only draw to get their women out of their clothes. Every single one of these stories.
I see nothing wrong with that. I mean, you know.
Well, and this guy can draw some naked women, but I'll tell you, it doesn't matter what the woman's doing, what the story is. In about six panels, those clothes are going off, and she goes through the whole strip naked, and she is the only one. Everybody else is fully clothed.
Yes.
It didn't matter if it was horror. It didn't matter if it was science fiction. It didn't matter if it was drama. It didn't matter if it was jungle women in scantily clad clothes. They're coming off anyway.
Yeah,
and then I started realizing, I can't, with the exception of Daniel Torres, who was the guy that did Druna? You remember
that? That's Serpieri, yeah, that was even dirtier.
Oh my God, I bought one of those in heavy metal when my wife and I first got married, and she's looking through it, she goes, oh honey, this is... There was one where they're three-holing the woman on a full-page spread.
And your wife's looking.
You know, and I'm like... And... But the
honestly, they draw and paint as well as, to me, the old Dutch masters. I mean, it's that level. So it imagines me how perverse and juvenile their work can be. But anyway, Jordy Bernay, he is a master. He's fantastic. And I really love those Cervantes.
Flatlining.
Okay. So anyway. But anyway, that was it. Thank you very much. It's very good. And if you want to read anything of women getting out of clothes, please pick up the Jordy Bernay. It doesn't matter what it is, except possibly Torpedo.
And it's well drawn, too. It's not like crappy, ugly women getting out of clothes.
All right, cool.
Well, Dallas, that leaves just you now.
All right, so I've got three different books from you guys. First
well, that's
one.
That's pretty good considering there's three other guys on the show. All
right, I'm talking about Red Rocket 7. First off, I don't know who could not like this book. It's friggin' awesome. It's slick, it's fast, it's sexy, it's no nonsense, it's unforgiving, it's friggin' awesome. I loved it. And it's just like a rock and roll song, which is appropriate.
Exactly, and that's exactly why I recommended it to you.
Well, I like it because, okay, so... Somehow, it's by Mike Allred, called Red Rocket 7, and I've always loved his art. He did Mad Men. That's what he's most famous for. Somehow, he achieves telling the history of rock and roll through the 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s, while just interspersing this with a really cool, sweet, like retro sci-fi story. So he puts all this in like one big package, and it works. It's freaking slick. I love it. The only thing that I was a little disappointed in, overall, the art. And let me explain that. Like, it's dynamic. Loved it. It's Mike Allred. It's classic Mike Allred. But the reason the art suffers is the colors and the inks, mostly. For some reason, to me, it seems a little muddy, only when compared to Mike Allred's other stuff. And I don't think his wife didn't work on it with him, so I wonder if that makes a huge difference.
I think she did color it.
I didn't see her name in the credits. But even if she did, it doesn't look up to, like, Madman par.
Really?
Or Madman par to me. Okay. I don't know. It's a little muddy. It's a little dark. The inks are a little thicker than I'm used to.
Yeah, it's right there. But like Allred.
It's great.
It's right
I loved
right
it.
Front.
Yeah, it's right here in the front. All right,
well, she's on there.
Separations.
Overall, it's great, though. But other than just the kind of dull colors and the thick inks, I loved it. I think it was a great read. I would literally recommend that to anyone.
Yeah, it's a fantastic book. I mean, you know, I was very fortunate that it landed on my shelf. So
it was nice, too, because I thought it was going to take me a while to read through it because it's a pretty thick book. So I sat down one night. Ellie was watching some show that
yeah,
I really didn't.
Fast.
Yeah,
it goes real fast.
Ellie's watching TV. I'm like, this is the perfect opportunity to read. I sat down. I read, like, 3/4 of it in one sitting. It's crazy. And I never do that because I'm a terrible reader.
Yeah, you didn't do it when I lent you the single issues. Thank you very much.
But anyway, Rook, thank you. Thank you, Rookie Baby. I loved it.
You
it was badass. It. Next up, we've got... all right, well, I had the same problem as Rook as far as Al's books. He gave me the first 12.
I did it on purpose.
I couldn't read the disc, the files that you gave me. So, after I told you that, the day before yesterday, you let me borrow Creepy Presents Bernie Wrightson. Obviously, I'm familiar with Bernie Wrightson's work.
Yeah.
He's awesome. He's one of the most prolific comic book artists, you know, especially of the 70s, 60s and 70s, I guess.
Yeah.
So anyway, seeing as you gave it to me the day before yesterday, I've only read about 15 pages of it. So like, I can't comment too much on it, but all I can say is kind of the general, the obvious, is Bernie Wrightson's art's amazing. His inks, his tonal work, is thick, awesome. It kind of reminds me of a lot of Al Williamson's inking.
Wally Wood, I think, a little bit.
Okay,
Wally
I can
Wood
see.
Combined with the Graham Ingalls from EC.
I'm not familiar with all the Graham Ingalls stuff, so
yeah,
I don't know him well enough.
That gnarly-looking guys or whatever.
Okay, like, one thing I love about Bernie, though, he's ultra-detailed, man. His stuff is sick.
Yeah.
It's great, especially his covers, his splash pages. They're just beautiful, and I love this guy. And so I'm looking forward to reading a lot more of this.
Did you read the story Jennifer in there?
Not yet. It's the next one I'm going to read.
That's Don's favorite.
I know. But I read the Black Cat, the old Edgar Allan Poe one.
Edgar Allan Poe adaptation.
It's great. The way Bernie paced it, though,
yeah.
is awesome. I mean, every panel is very important. Like
that's
you
his peak. I mean, in the early 70s or
I'm
whatever,
sure.
mid-70s, that's his peak.
I loved it, though.
He did
man.
That Frankenstein book after that, the complete Frankenstein. I think something happened to his artwork after that. I think he burned out his eyes. Something because his style, I mean, not literally, but I think... Something happened.
His playing with matches. And
yeah, I think he changed his technique or something because his line work wasn't the same anymore. But that, to me, is like the best stuff he ever did.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for letting me read this. I'll talk more about it in the next episode
cool.
when I actually finish it. And then last, Don let me borrow Warlock, which chronicles the character Adam Warlock. It's all of Jim Starlin's most prolific stuff, I think, from Marvel in the 70s. And I liked it. It was... It was classic Starlin. It was really good stuff, and he can be very heady. And you got to remember, this is in the context of a 1970s superhero comic, so it's very melodramatic. But I loved it. Hold on, I took notes.
Hold on, I took notes.
I know. I read Warlock the day after you suggested it to me, so I had to write stuff down so I remember it. But I found it was really heavy on allegory, a lot of different stuff. So, like, some subtle and some really obvious. Like, some of the most obvious stuff was, you know, the Universal Church of Truth, very much like, you know, Islam or the Crusades, Christianity's Crusades. It was very much like that, a religion going out and kind of using force to convert people.
Well, Christianity did it, too.
Yeah.
Yeah,
well,
I always thought
that's what I said,
the
Crusades.
I thought
yeah. But like
you were
I said...
the Inquisition.
Well, but like I said, there was also a lot of subtle allegorical... things, I guess. I won't get too much into it, but there was this really great scene that I really liked, and this was also subtle, and this was classic Starlin, and this is something I wouldn't have noticed, and I'm kind of surprised I noticed it, because I'm usually not very perceptive. Issue number 3, there's a point where Adam Warlock comes into contact with himself from the future, and he ends up having to kill himself. Yeah. It's this really kind of weird, kind of trippy scene. So, issue number 6, it actually occurs, and this scene's completely repeated, but it's never pointed out that you'd seen it before, and it's just literally just a little echo. So I was reading it thinking, where have I read this before? I've never actually read the Warlock books. So I went back to issue 3, and it's the exact scene happening, but now it's from the other Warlock's perspective. Real subtle, because he never mentions it. It's great.
Well, that struck me, because I was reading these as a kid, and then it was years later, you know, it was canceled. It wasn't being done anymore. And then years later, he came back to it in that Avengers annual. And that's where it happened. Warlock basically died. And when I read that, it really struck me. I found it profound. Then I went back and started finding old back issues, and I found where that happened, and I was just staggered. It's one of the things that has just always stayed with me. The reason he was doing that was because of the character, the Magus. He was trying to keep the Magus from coming. But in the old issues, he watched it from afar and saw it happen. And then in the Avengers annual, it showed what happened from a different perspective. Same dialogue, same everything. It's just a different camera angle. And to me, that's the one that struck me. And that's why I was so upset to find out, you know, he came back in the Infinity Gauntlet. Because at the time, I felt it kind of cheapened it, you know. But I've changed my mind since.
Well, that's all I got as far as reviews. But I got to say, I got to thank you guys. Because thanks to you guys, I'm, like, back into reading comics heavy. Like, I've been just reading left and right. I'm reading some Preachers, some Transmetropolitans. I'm reading Lock and Key. Just some really good stuff right now. And usually it takes me forever to read a book, but thanks to you guys, because you forced me to read these, I've been just reading like a champ.
Cool.
Good.
Okay, on that note, guys, let's take a music break, and then we're going to jump back with our special guests.
Who are we playing?
This is my band. I'll do us first. This is Dungeon Boss, and this is a song called The Art of Subtlety. You can find... we're going to put a link to my band on our page, so just look for Dungeon Boss and you'll see it. All right, enjoy.
Yeah.
welcome back. We got a huge crowd of people here
with nothing to say.
We've got some.
Back in a moment of silence.
We've got some special guests today, so we're gonna go around the table and introduce some people. New people, will you introduce yourselves, please?
I'm new.
Who are you?
I'm Craig.
You're not technically new. You're returning.
Hey, the return of the Craig, then? Yeah.
The return of me?
Yeah, it's Cameron.
And I'm Matt.
And Courtney.
Yeah.
Female. What's up, guys?
Female points of view. Great for arguments. Great
we
for
got,
arguments.
Okay, Cameron, Craig, and Courtney, of course, have been on the show before. Matt's new. Never been on there. Last time I saw Matt, he had a pretty sweet beard. It's gone now. It fell off.
It's the shame of...
He was thinner, too.
America.
Hair falls off me, too. It's not on my face. So, okay, it's open game. Who wants to talk about what? Because I got nothing.
I had a question come up one night, two nights ago, and I thought it would be interesting to get everyone's take on it. And it is, if you could have any superpower that is completely pointless and meaningless... Yeah. What superpower would you have? And, for example, I'll say mine, which was any time I would make eye contact with somebody, they would sneeze. That was my power. So I had to wear glasses all the time to not make eye contact with people because I could constantly make them sneeze.
Wouldn't that just magnify the problem?
No, sunglasses.
Sunglasses.
Like ruby quartz?
No. Yeah, you'd have to have ruby quartz sneezing glasses.
Be awesome.
I would like to have the power to turn canned beer into bottled beer. Then if anybody else tried to take the bottle and drink it, it turned back to a can.
No Coke, only Pepsi.
Incredible hindsight. I would actually like to have the power to never have to pee when drinking.
I really like that. I'd like to have the power to get you to go up and make me a shot right now.
I would like to shoot spaghetti from my dick.
The Italian stallion.
Don't lie, you've already got that power.
You gotta see a doctor, man.
You got anything, Al?
No.
The Flying Spaghetti Monster crew.
He wants to salivate spaghetti sauce.
I do that already. What are you talking about?
Oh, shit, that's great.
Yeah, Rook, I'll take one, too.
Oh, we're going to do shots?
We're going to do some shots.
Live on air. Shot.
Yeah, that was just happening live on air.
This is great radio. Obviously, we've been doing this for 50 episodes, and we haven't gotten any more professional.
No. No.
It's only going to go downhill from here.
I think shots should be our music break.
We've got...
I play shots.
That's mine.
Vincent Van Gogh, double espresso, double caffeine, coffee-flavored vodka.
I'm not going to sleep tonight.
Yeah, but Hillbilly lives here.
We've got the Christian Brothers California Brandy. You drink brandy?
Oh, my God. That
Christian
Brothers California Brandy was responsible for a 10-year-old walking naked in Spring Hill tonight.
Oh, is that...
Mother was arrested.
I saw that in the news.
The kid blew a .10.
Nice.
And he was 10.
That's freaking terrible. How did this happen?
I don't know. She was all pilled out
or
something.
Spring Hill.
That's a good
spring
point.
Pill.
It's almost as bad as Hudson.
Well, yeah, and actually, same story. When the cops got to the house, found the mother, she was passed out. They had to wake her up.
And then she talked to them. She talked to them, and then 2 minutes later, she passed out in the middle of conversation with the cops.
Now we've also got some Canadian whiskey, which I'm gonna put bets on that if that 10-year-old drank this, he would still be sober.
Hey, look, I'm just grabbing whatever the hell was in the liquor cabinet. All the good stuff's already been drank, okay?
Hey, here's a good question.
Yeah, you're welcome for that on Halloween.
Please, bring the show back.
Bringing up the drunk baby, if you could have any comic couple, which one would you think would be the worst parents? Just the worst.
Scott Summers and somebody else.
Anybody in Scott Summers.
How about Wolverine and Scott Summers adopt a child?
The custody battles would be epic.
That Amendment 2 issue.
Who's the butch and who's the bitch in that relationship?
I don't even think we need to discuss.
Yeah,
that.
Wolverine's the butch.
Why don't you look me in the eyes?
I don't think Wolverine's gonna take it.
I think back hair always decides that decision.
Done.
And the dog nut shots.
Grundle.
Thanks, Tyrion. You want to talk? Okay. So. Anybody seen any good movies lately? Let's talk movie.
Let's talk comic book movies.
I got a movie. Have you ever seen a movie called Comic Book Villains?
No. What is this?
This is a movie that I watched today by accident. It's about comic shops. It's from 2002. You never saw this movie? Okay, check
it's it like
out.
A documentary, it? Isn't
yeah.
it?
That's an
yeah,
I have
very
it at home.
Faintly remember it, but yeah, I did see it.
That's an effed up movie, man.
Oh, dude, it totally. It was like Green Street Hooligans.
Yeah. It starts out as like, you know, some kid at a comic shop and everything's like, hey, you know, I'm going to buy a new collection and all that. And it turns out that somebody in town died and the guy had like a major comic book collection and there's two comic shop owners that are fighting each other to get this collection. It's definitely like a movie that kind of takes you by surprise. So, yeah, that's a good one. Check it out. It's on Flix.
Very smooth my nice. Ass.
I've never heard of that one.
This
I think
didn't either. By the way.
I never did either.
The last kind of comic book movie I saw was that Comic Book Confidential. Don, you've seen that, right? I think we might have talked about that, though, on air.
I've tried to watch it. I watched part of it, and I just kind of lose interest. It's pretty interesting, the parts I've seen. It was huge. It came out in, like, in 1988. It came out in 1988!
Sorry! I'm, like, waving Don to talk louder. We're having mic issues like we've had for the past 49 episodes. Sorry.
But no, I've just never been able to sit down long enough to watch the whole thing. A little bit I've seen, it was interesting. It was a major thing when it came out at the time.
So here we go. Isn't Jack the Giant Slayer a comic book?
It's based off of Jack the
Giant
Slayer.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, I'm thinking of... There was a comic book a few years back called I Kill Giants. Have you guys heard of this?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Okay, that's what I confused it with.
Jack the Giant Slayer comic book.
Did you have a very locked away? Jack?
Come on, man!
What is this Jack and the Beanstalk you speak of?
Check that out.
Yeah,
I have
a book over here of fables. I'll lend that to you this time.
Okay, fair enough. Alright, comic book movies. Anything else anyone's seen recently they really liked?
Can we talk about a comic book movie? Alright, go ahead.
Ladies first.
Gentlemen first.
You have an orifice that someone
Gentleman
can put something
first?
In. Go first.
I've never heard that.
Nice.
Wow.
That's very nice. That's charming, Cameron, really.
Single ladies.
Yeah. And he will be for a while.
Did you have, like, a super explicit label on the episode?
Maybe a trigger warning?
You
want to
call Trevor?
Hey, it's not like it's hot dog sloppy, I mean.
All right, for that I am going to go first. Rick and I have been talking about the fact that they're going to start working up to a Crossed movie.
Oh, yes,
wow,
absolutely.
Yeah.
And if anybody's read Garth Ennis's Cross, I mean, it's plain in your face gore, sex,
the most depraved
violence. The most depraved crap you can think of. I really don't see how they're going to make this movie and not have it like an NC-17.
It's never going to go to a movie.
They're
starting
just
going to
use the same
episodes.
Makeup from Priest.
Oh God, let's hope not.
I don't think it's ever going to go to an actual film. They're doing webisodes, and I don't think they're ever going to get to a film, because you can get away with a lot on the internet.
Oh, yeah.
But how much of that are they going to be able to put on screen?
You can't translate 90% of that into...
No, you can't. I can't translate 90% of that into coherent thought. It hurts.
Although we were saying the same thing about The Walking Dead.
Well, it's a totally different thing. I mean, in The Walking Dead, you have the zombie aspect with all the depraved stuff that happens in The Walking Dead is still pale in comparison to the stuff they try to do all the time, frame for frame, and Crossed.
But yet they have also softened The Walking Dead on the screen.
Oh yeah, they've absolutely softened The Walking
There's
Dead.
No way to soften Crossed. There's
yeah,
no way
impossible.
To do it. Yeah.
You put it out as an R, you take out rape or whatever it is. I mean,
it would be a 10-minute movie. It would be that special feature on Cabin Fever that's 10 minutes long, and
there's
nothing
in
it.
Crossed that walks around with a donkey dick. A severed donkey dick, okay?
It's true.
I mean,
it's prosthetics, man.
There is a scene in the book where one of the Crossed is raping a small child.
Okay, you get rid of that.
Another one is ripping the mother in half.
Is the character.
Oh, that's acceptable.
That's the rape.
The ripping in half part's no big deal.
The ripping in half has been done before. I mean,
but
we've seen Saw.
This is all happening all at the same time. Yeah, I want to see the censors, the people who decide what movie ratings are, have all that going on at the screen at the same time, and go, oh yeah, that's a rated R.
No, yeah, you want to see them.
Okay,
you want to see their heads explode.
You cut
frankly.
Out the child rape, and then you have the last 20 minutes of The Last House on the Left.
Rook's wife just got home. She comes home into like a huge party of people just hanging out, taking shots.
There's just like
talking on a microphone.
Hi.
Hey, Mel, you want a shot?
Hey, baby.
Now, more interesting to me is the announcement of Peter Dinklage possibly joining the cast of the next X-Men movie.
Specifically Puck, probably?
Yeah, that's the only character I can see him playing.
They're talking about throwing the idea that there's a little tiny Trask and he wants to make things bigger than himself. I think that's... Of course, they all same article said Mr. Sinister. So...
Yeah, okay, if they put Peter Dinklage as Sinister, I swear to God, I will go to movie theaters and I will piss on the film
maybe
I can ever put it up on
when
the
Sinister
screen.
Was like the little young boy in the house with Scott.
And the Sally and Nathan, what was his last name?
I don't know. I think the concept of him as Sinister is just ridiculous. It really is.
They did say it was ridiculous. But I really think...
I think David Bowie should be Mr. Sinister.
Dance, magic, dance.
he'd have, like, the best facial structure for it.
I'd agree. I think he'd make a... Don, since you said you don't know who Mr. Sinister is, he's just an old X-Men character. Claremont created him during Inferno, I think, or right before Inferno.
Yeah, like
around the time of the Mutant Massacre.
It's actually
after
been
you
confirmed
stop reading.
By MTV Geek that he will be playing Bolivar Trask.
Are you serious?
Yes!
Is he,
so does this guy have like a mustache and a little goatee like Bolivar?
Yeah.
Oh, he does. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, I gotta say that's better than Puck because I really didn't want to see the Alpha Flight in
that's,
a movie.
They're gonna make such a thing about making bigger than he is, though. For that.
Yeah.
I'm glad
like,
they're going
gonna be a
with
whole
Bolivar
thing.
Trask and not like Stephen Lang or Larry Trask or any of the other guys. They're going straight to the source.
Yeah. They go. Well, they have. You know, we've waited 4 goddamn X-Men movies. For the Sentinels. Why have we waited this damn long to see a damn Sentinel?
We got a clunky Sentinel head.
Beginning
in
of the third,
yeah,
we got a fastball special and a clunky Sentinel head.
We did
get
a fastball.
I was so excited about
with
that.
With no goddamn reason for it. It was stupid.
It was a danger
Let's
room.
Show you the Sentinel, but never have actually seen Sentinels in the canon of the movie.
Do you understand? You know, I saw that movie in high school, and I was so excited about it and so happy. And
how
I just
old are you,
dated,
Courtney?
I just dated everybody in the room, I think. That's exciting. No, I was so happy about it. And Fastball Special, Danger Room, Sentinels, it set up a whole movie that I then got really upset about.
You know, with the rumor about it being time-jumping in this movie, we're not going to see Sentinels in it at all. You're only going to see Trask for 5 minutes.
You're going to see, like, a hand... You're gonna see like the outline shadowing silhouette.
You're
of
gonna
face.
See yet
really?
Another depressing
no.
X-Men movie.
Yeah, you're yeah.
yeah
exactly.
I
They're gonna
have
a
no
cameo
hopes,
from
no
somebody from the
care.
First trilogy.
It's already depressing.
No, they've got like 17 people from the first again. One. They've brought in everybody they can think of.
Because they're just jumping.
They're still
worlds.
Talking about
That's
Halle
they're
Berry.
They're
for
jumping
Christ
time, and it. You're not gonna get the payoff you're expecting, which is why I'm not looking forward to it.
Here's what you have to expect. The hairy abs of Juggernaut. I'm the Juggernaut.
I'm the Juggernaut, bitch!
We don't talk about that. It makes me upset.
It makes everyone upset. That's why they suck.
Okay, quick question. Who liked X-Men 3? Anybody?
I really liked most of the casting in X-Men 3. I know you're complaining
Kelsey
about Kitty
Grammer
Pride over there.
Perfect.
Yes, yes.
But
Kelsey
I was
Grammer
really
as
impressed.
The perfect.
I was way happier with whatever faces than I was in the previous Kitty Pride.
Okay. Well, I agree. The Kitty Pryde, whoever that was in X2, I wasn't, you know, I didn't really care about that. But who liked Ellen? Is that her name? Ellen Page?
Ellen Page.
Who liked her as
Ellen
Kitty?
Ellen Page.
Who, did you like her as Kitty? Did you think she made a good Kitty Pryde, though?
No.
I'm biased because I want to be inside her.
Yeah, yeah. I want to create Juno in real life with her.
He's single, ladies. He's available.
All right, I think it's time for another show.
Cameron likes long walks on the beach.
We are going to take a quick music break. So we'd like to get as many music breaks in since this is the special 50th episode. And Rook has something special that he wants to do.
Dallas is self-promoting.
Yes, I'm actually going to throw out... This actually is in... this is an homage to Dead Space 3 coming out. I hope I pronounced the name of this band right. It's Exila. And this is a song called, we all recognize it, In the Air Tonight.
Can you feel it coming in?
Very sore spot for most of us.
But for those of you that don't know, DC has announced a new comic book series that they're going to be doing. Is this going to be a digital series?
I don't think so.
I'm not sure.
I didn't read anything about digital myself.
But they have talked about the idea that they're going to be putting out a new non-canon series for Superman. And they announced the first person that's going to be writing the series. It's a bit controversial. Help me with the name here.
It's Orson Scott Card.
Thank you.
Who, you know, I love Orson Scott Card. I hate him as a person, but the Ender series drives me nuts. It's so good. And I don't even want to fault him for having the views he has. I just want a better...
And those views that she's talking about, for anybody who hasn't seen this yet, is that he is a highly outspoken opponent of marriage equality rights. He actually...
It's not even outspoken. He's part of a board. I can't remember the name of it now. But they go out against him.
He basically feels that homosexuality should be, like, criminalized, and you need to go to jail. Period.
Welcome to 2013. How were the 60s?
Right? You know? But interestingly enough, earlier today it was announced that, Christ, we've done quite a few shots already.
Rick just forgot how to read.
You know what? He's a very shitty Irishman.
You forgot to take the little man off your mic before you talk. Take a drink.
No, earlier today we actually had a writer come out in support of balance to the new Superman concepts. With if you're gonna throw Orson Scott Carr into the mix, that he put his name out there to be one of the writers to balance out the series, and that is none other than David, and I'm gonna fuck up his last name, Gerald.
Sure,
David Gerald.
David Gerald, Gerald.
If he wants the call and correct it.
The vowels are silent.
Oh my god, I am such a mick.
Two shots.
Andy's drinking beers.
Like three shots.
Yeah, he's had a half a beer.
Kiss my ass.
I had a shot a while ago before we got here too.
Okay, so
yeah, you had a shot of his semen.
Hey, that's all over Dallas's face.
That's what I'm saying. Dallas had a shot of your semen.
Why does it always go south so fast?
No more counter programming, Spice.
We went from DC to semen.
So what is everyone's, how does everyone feel about that?
Yeah, I just, I give credit to David that he's coming out and saying, you know, let's throw balance in the mix. You know, if you're going to throw somebody that's so outspoken, that's anti-gay, on your writer's list, but let me throw the balance in, and I'll write part of it, too.
Okay, I'll look at it this way. I am extremely surprised that DC has chosen Orson Scott Card to write this. Because of his views, and seeing as how they made Earth 2 Green Lantern gay.
I have some
that they have too. Become they have That's become the thing. Standard of equality along with Marvel.
Whoa,
and along with some
minute.
Of Hollywood.
Is he going to be writing Green Lantern?
No, he'll be writing Superman.
It's Superman.
But DC, home of Earth 2 Green Lantern, who is gay.
Of equality here.
Yeah, and they made such a
As
big
a lady,
deal
I want to talk about it. Can we talk about the new 52 and I think I've talked about it before and how what they've done to women. Like, there's no standard of equality there. It was popular at the time to say we have a gay Green Lantern, look at us, but they didn't even handle it correctly.
No, they handled it in a piss poor way.
And they're not handling this correctly. They're handling
comic books and
yeah,
Aquaman
that they haven't even acknowledged.
No, probably the most.
My problem is that they're handling this the same way they handled all of the mothers who said, wait, I have daughters who want to read your books, and Starfire is not, she's not sexually liberated anymore, she's just a slut. They said, oh, well, we're DC, sorry, too bad. And it's the same thing with this. When people said, look, we're not happy about this, he's such a proponent for criminalizing and making us feel, you know, they said, oh, well, personal opinions are just that. And I agree with that. But that's not the way you treat your consumers. That's not the way you react to your fan base.
Well, it's clear that they forgot a certain demographic inside of that, and I have to be that guy when I say it's 2013, you know, as it's not a right that we should be deciding. It's a civil rights thing. And, you know, we're not that far removed from giving African Americans their own civil rights and saying, you know, everybody is the same. And so when you're taking things like, depowering women inside comic books and, kind of making a publicity stunt, if you will, out of being gay or something like that, it's really kind of offensive. And I'm probably one of the most straight and, to look at me, you wouldn't even think that this is my opinion. But seriously, it's not an issue anymore.
You do look like a gay basher.
I do. I mean,
he does. He had me shave his head the other day.
I want to take him out to the
game
because bear lovers are going to buy him drinks. That's
it's a ploy.
That was our problem.
Argument with Marvel.
Yeah. Marvel didn't take out any press the first time they introduced a gay character in their universe. They let the press handle itself. DC actively sought out the press.
We had a press release.
Take a look at the Wedding of North Star. Marvel handled that the same way they handled every other superhero wedding. They made it a big deal. They said, someone is getting married. You know, they put out the postcards. We cordially invite you to the wedding of North Star. You know, da 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 da. Just like they did with Reed Richards and Sue Storm,
yeah.
Scott and Jean.
But they didn't seek out the Associated
exactly.
Press. They didn't Overman. Seek out Time Magazine.
Exactly.
They didn't seek out MSNBC.
DC is an attention whore. They're the naked girl on the beach doing cartwheels.
Exactly, because their movie universe has failed.
No, you know what they are?
So they're looking to equal Marvel and everything.
Same situation with Captain America attacking political parties in that latest issue.
Thank you. Yeah, that's something that you brought up. Go more into this for a second.
They use, like, what I brought up with online the other day was political propaganda in comic books. Like, when comic books were not being interesting, they used things that were happening to make them popular again. And I think they're like what you're saying. Things like that, you know. There's tons of things. I mean,
okay.
Even in the '60s. I mean, the '40s.
Yeah, but
I mean,
look at Green Lantern,
Green Arrow.
Even Doomsbury. You go even strip
second.
Comic.
The X-Men came out during a time of civil rights. Okay, and the X-Men has been a constant civil rights commentary, where you know you have the Mutant Registration Act. You have various different civil rights concepts coming into. Oh, absolutely. So Marvel has carried a very political line with their series for many, many years. So honestly, for Captain America to come out and rail against one political party or another, I really don't have that much of an issue with Marvel doing that, because this is something that Marvel has previously established themselves in doing, whether it be under a more more like a behind the curtain kind of thing. You know, it's not as in your face as it used to be. Mm-hmm. But I think the readers today need it more in their face. I don't think a lot of people today aren't able to read between the lines. So for Marvel to throw Captain America's, you know, throwing his shield at it was at the Tea Party, wasn't
yeah.
it?
The attack so. The Tea Party
now,
with
now,
shield.
Now I don't mean to, you know, cast a stereotype or anything. I don't think the average comic book reader goes and reads the Huffington Post, Fox News, MSNBC, any of those news sites.
I couldn't agree more.
Well, so they aren't as
fair to say.
In-depth with what's going on in the country as a whole. They don't know about the battles. They don't know about
it
any of this
a
stuff.
It is to draw in more readers, though.
That's yeah, exactly.
That's my point. That's what I'm saying. Is
however,
that's
the
why
goal for any publishing company is to draw in more readers.
It's
and
for
it's,
any company, period, the goal is to expand your consumer base.
And
it's simple economics.
It's surprising to me that no mainstream news outlet has actually picked it up as indoctrination. The way Fox News picked up the kids singing the song We Love Obama as indoctrination of the youth into the liberal view of society.
I don't think people view that comic books are the same kind of medium that, you know, television or the internet or something like
that. But they are mass media because of sales.
Yes, and I won't quite say that because, well, the Huffington Post picks up a lot of articles about comic books as art. They review Fantagraphics books.
But how many of these things do you see on television or radio? These are the most popular mediums of even today's age.
No, that's true. And that's the point, though, is Marvel and DC are going for something bigger than art itself, which is the medium that comic books are. So they're going for political.
They're looking at a whole ideal change in the country.
Here's a question that I think Craig and I
and it might not even be a bad thing. It might not even be a bad thing that this is happening.
I don't think it's a bad thing at all.
It's evolving like it did in the 50s to the 70s. It completely shifted. Even the art did.
The key to survival. Yeah.
You know, you're looking at a comic book in the 90s and then looking at a comic book in the year 2000, they're completely different.
Yeah.
I mean,
here's the question I think that Craig and I were bantering back and forth kind of a little bit is, does it really belong in your comic books? Does political and sociological issues belong in your comics?
I say not even the dude asked the question. It's a necessity. I mean, it's what helps keep the issues relevant and, you know, close to your attention span.
The other side of the argument will say it doesn't belong. You know, if it's... But, I mean, if it's a liberally biased point of view in the comic, naturally, the conservatives are going to say it doesn't belong there, and vice versa. But yeah, art is a way of free speech. It is covered under the First Amendment.
I'm on the fence on the issue. I think, as a reader, I would like it just to be out of it, and more into the story and character development instead of...
I think you're still going to get it on even on the underlying commentary level. Like he says, X-Men has always been the civil rights commentary.
Yes, but
you
what
don't
I'm saying, but
necessarily
what I'm saying
pick
is,
it up if you're not looking for it,
but
that's what it
I
is.
I like it not to be in your face.
Well,
I'll grant you that.
As a reader. As me, as somebody in the comic book community, I guess you would call it, I think it needs to be in it. To keep it going.
Just like television, just like movies, arts, entertainment. So you want to, it's escapism for the most part, but you want to get realism so you can relate to it. And it can be allegorical, but it doesn't have to be in your face.
Look at how many Law and Orders and look at how many different types there are and how long it's been on. I mean, all it does is pretty much rip stories out of the headlines. And to stay relevant means to stay to the attention of mass media, like the mass media consumer.
Now, don't get me wrong. As much as I would like to see it, I don't want to see Captain America throwing his shield in the face of Mitt Romney and saying, "I love Obama." I don't want to see
that's
that.
That's a little
but
too.
As
yeah,
long
that is pretty extreme.
But I mean,
and
as long
you know what that is,
if
that's
the
not
underlying...
America. So he wouldn't do it. I mean, that's not America. What he's
but
doing attacking
is
a party
underlying...
that's American. You're allowed to do that.
But
I mean,
but
you can't just
know,
be
the
like,
underlying
"Hey."
F you, dude. Civil rights. I mean, they don't slap it right there in your face and say, "Hey, look, we need equality." I don't want to see the blatant. You know what? You do the underlying. You do the underlying.
Well,
you can take from it whatever you want to.
Even an underlying, there's only so many stories you can tell. That's a basic story. You're going to tell it for race for women for one day we'll tell
but
it
think
for
about
aliens,
this think about this as long as comics have existed, all right, and since it started and it started building its fan base has been built on opposing ideas from its readers. So you think when they add these things in there and they make it political, what they're doing is they're making more fans in that sense because they're splitting up fan bases. If that makes any sense.
Okay, well, so here's the thing. As far as political ideas and politically driven stories, in the past, I think it's always been clear in comic books, but it's been a little more subtle. For instance, okay, let's talk about X-Men again. The Sentinels. That's clearly an allegory for civil rights. Okay, hold on. Shit.
All right, I'm going to talk like this now.
Alright, so, okay. In the past, for instance, X-Men, Sentinels are obviously an allegory, but here you go. Civil rights.
Obviously.
They use the example of big, massive robots fighting the X-Men. Whereas now it's more realistic.
Well, do you think that the idea of the
You're
big
technically calling anybody
kind of
who's not a white American a mute?
The big brother concepts.
Well, yeah, and I think that's the point, though, okay? So Sentinels were big brother. They were the big concepts. Nowadays, you actually have the government. In place of the Sentinels, in comic books, in place of big science fiction robots, you actually have the government. So it's become more realistic. Does that make any sense? Because the Sentinels are still escapism. Now you're actually reaching into territory. Like I said earlier, Spider-Man's literally shaking President Obama's hand. You know, but in the past, they might have had an allegory for President Obama, not specifically the President of the United States.
The Sentinels a lot of times get overshadowed, especially if there's any underlying or subtle tones to
the
character itself, because everything in the Marvel Universe has to be endgame, end-world, cataclysmic. Like, everything has to be a definitive end to the universe, and not only, you know, like, just the city, or just, like, trying to break something like Batman's will, and I'm taking a shot.
Yeah. Shots all around. Speaking of which, we should take a shot every time I say allegory.
Hey, you said it like 9 times.
Exactly.
Well, I mean, looking at that
point
of view,
word of the day.
Would you think that the Mutant Registration Act and the Civil War arc would be some kind of an allegory to the Holocaust?
I hope it would be a lot better.
Yes. Absolutely.
That's the point of entertainment, though.
Choosing comic books.
To
Disney.
Be able to take something that's
Marvel.
Serious in
Come
real
again.
Life
Jew move.
And use, I don't want to use that word again, but I, for lack of a better word, use an allegory for it. Like I said, the Sentinels, you just said the... yeah, seriously. I wrote it on my hand, so every time I forget like what word I should use...
I think that's the word he taught his wife today.
He got zapped.
She is British.
My wife is... she's getting her doctor's. She's much smarter than me.
You just made a comment about Jews and comic books.
Like any well-trained husband has said.
What was it? Last year, Jimmy Pagliani came out with the Tattered Man comic. Have you read that yet?
No.
Oh, God.
Now, trust me, I am so far behind on comic books, it's not even funny.
I'm going to give you the Tattered Man book. I want you to read it. It's actually, what it is it talks about the idea of the, it's a golem, basically. It's an avenging, the avenging spirit. Really, I'm telling the Jew what a golem is, really.
Yeah, thank you. I do appreciate that ill-gotten journey into my heritage.
This particular golem is built out of the death rags of the Jews from the Holocaust from a particular internment camp where, you know, it basically rises up out of the mass grave and slaughters all of the Nazis. And
yeah, it's my kind of book.
Yeah, absolutely.
I would love to.
It sounds like
read
it has like an Anne Frank meets Tomb Raider feel to it.
It's more like an Anne Frank meets
the Terminator.
Like, the spirit.
It's an M. Night Shyamalan movie. That's what it is. Shyamalan.
You know, I mean, as far as like social commentary in comic books, you know, there's certain books that I read that I don't want to see them in, you know. But then there's particular books where, like, Captain America, X-Men, I expect to see social commentary, I expect to see political views expressed in these particular books. So, do I have a problem with Captain America throwing a shield? No, I really don't. I think that it's a necessary thing. I think that Marvel has always pushed the edge with political, social commentary, where DC has more been the attention whore of, look at us, we're so progressive.
Well, yeah, that's why they solicited. That's why they solicited Time Magazine. That's why they solicited Yahoo. That's why they solicited the Associated Press when Green Lantern was getting gay married.
Hot news, DC is endorsing
it. Wasn't
Marco
even
Rubio.
Married. married. Wait.
Rubio.
Wait, can we talk about the follow-up to introducing the gay Green Lantern where they just slaughtered any chance of you ever seeing him actually be
gay? Oh, yeah,
gay?
Absolutely. It's like, okay, here, we're going to introduce a gay character. He proposes to his boyfriend, and then we kill his boyfriend.
Which means he's going to mourn for the rest of the series. He'll never kiss another man.
He will be a vampire out of Twilight.
It's a total cop-out.
It was to get press to sell one issue.
Yeah, it was a pathetic endeavor by DC.
That was marketing. Okay, well, to add some variety, since I'm the host and I should probably do this, we started to go around the table.
Hey,
let's
over here.
Pick another topic. Let's start to talk about something else. All right, ladies first.
I want to talk about ladies in comic books. I want to talk about Brian Wood relaunching X-Men as an all-woman roster. Because it's going to bring me back to superhero books. I don't read superhero books. I'm a horror kind of girl. And it's going to bring me back because there's
Storm. So you're a horror girl?
I'm a horror.
Horror.
That's what I am, yes. All right. Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you.
Horror.
Actually, I really have to commend him on this.
Oh, no, I'm really excited about it. He is taking fans to task. He's being assaulted on Twitter right now.
Who exactly?
Yeah, it's Twitter.
Yeah, it's Twitter, but...
Marvel's done a very good job of keeping very good females in the lineup.
Oh, no, it's an excellent lineup.
Who is the roster of this team?
Storm, Psylocke, which I'm probably mispronouncing because I hate her. Rogue, Jubilee. All right, thank you. There's others. I can't remember them. I stop at Jubilee because I'm so excited.
Wolverine,
right
in there.
It's got to be Wolverine.
Thank you so goddamn
Wolverine. Give me Wolverine.
Wolverine in a brawl.
No, but they're taking
babe.
A task over Twitter. They're saying to him, look, this book needs to be... hush your mouth. They're telling him that he needs to rename the book, and he literally, the last thing I read was he told a fan who...
Would it be Why Women?
Yeah, Why Women. You know what? I take Why Women over X Women. He literally, the last thing I read on Twitter, because I stopped reading because it was depressing, he went back to a fan who co-tweeted at Marvel, like, hey, what do we have to do to get this book renamed to X Women? And he said, over my dead body. I'm not doing it. And it, I don't know if you guys have ever read Brian Wood. He did Channel Zero, and he did Demo, which was amazing. It was an excellent book for women, because it didn't focus on women. It focused on people, and if there was a woman-centric issue, it was very comfortable. It was very relatable without being like, you have a vagina, ha ha ha.
Yeah, periods.
Yeah, well, you know, it wasn't something that necessarily men couldn't relate to. It was just something that was specifically woman for once.
Well, I think Marvel's taking this particular set of female characters, and these are beloved female characters.
They are beloved.
It's not like they're trying to introduce a new series of female characters with this book.
Let me interject one sentence. I think the majority of those characters were either created, well, not created, but pioneered by Chris Claremont, who was always an outspoken advocate of female characters.
That is true.
Basically, his phrase was, why can't this character be a woman?
Yeah.
So I think he kind of started the trend.
Well, and one of the things with Claremont is, with Claremont's reign on the X-Men, you not only saw female characters become powerful members of the team.
Was it
Dan
Claremont?
Saw
was
them
Storm take over?
Storm is a leader of a new team.
Yeah. You saw Claremont took a female character and put her in charge of the team.
Was going to be in charge of me, I'd want it to be Storm.
That bridge inequality is so in everyday media, like, it's one of these things where, you know, when you say things like, I want equal rights, it has to be everything. It has to be, you know, everything from TV to newspaper to, and so when you see this kind of empowerment inside of comic books, it kind of lends a whole different creed and a message that you're trying to deliver. I mean, can you think about the
pure philosophy of having an all-woman X-Men team 10 years ago?
But do you see, what I like about it now is that I don't think Brian Wood's going to make it like, here's women. Women. It's going to be a team of X-Men, and it's going to be gorgeous, and it's not going to be specific.
Because of their history, I guess.
For women.
It's exciting, and it's nice. It's refreshing. I think it's pretty neat that it's all female. I mean, as long as they're not blaring Nicki Minaj and the X-Jet.
You know what?
Wait,
even,
I blared Nicki Minaj
woman,
and my
I
X-Jet.
As a woman, I wouldn't I wouldn't object to a 10-second dance party to Nicki Minaj.
Okay,
it would be
you know
okay.
What? Here's something I actually just thought of is, you know, Marvel's now coming out with this team of female, an entire female X-Men team, but DC actually was on the forefront of this with the Birds of Prey.
Well, they're progressive.
Oh, yeah.
They're super
That's
progressive,
you
say
I'll
yourself.
Give you Birds of Prey. They are progressive.
They were like, we
got to
get
was
on
even
this.
Before.
Yes.
That's not now. Now that they've re-released with Starfire, and they took that whole alien sexual liberation and turned
honestly,
it into. I'm just sleeping with everybody, and I don't know their name.
Yeah, DC now. I'm sorry, but DC now compared to what they were 10, 20 years ago.
It's not really a comparison.
No, DC. They're a shadow. They're a shadow of what they were.
And
I
that's what makes it so great for Marvel right now.
Detective Comics is going the way of Marvel. When we were, 17, 18 years old.
That was a long time ago.
Oh, Christ, yeah. But you almost see DC doing catch-up. DC's doing catch-up to what Marvel's doing.
Well, I think
they were playing catch-up, and then they took themselves 10 steps back.
Yeah, that's the point.
We don't talk about DC movies.
Yeah.
They're just trying to set these ploys out there for you to go out and purchase DC Comics.
That's why they're marketing things the way they do. When they have the gay character, I mean, they are playing catch-up, but they're trying to point out, hey, we're also in the game, and we have a gay character, too. And, yeah, it's really absurd, it's loud, it's stupid, but that's what they're doing, I think.
Yeah, and I have a serious problem with selecting one of the Green Lanterns for the role, because I have to say that one of the Green Lanterns is really not that big of a risk.
If any of the Green Lanterns, I thought it would have been Rook.
really? Okay.
That ring just became a sex toy.
Rook was Green Lantern in one of our Halloween parties.
Well, anybody that knows me knows that I go to the conventions cosplaying as Guy Gardner. I have, you know,
yeah, you pull it off very well.
Yeah, I've taken painstaking.
I go with Wonder Woman.
More like Gay Gardner.
The
Brajol.
Giggity Gardner.
I
like Giggity Gardner.
So that, you know, when I've shown up at different conventions, you know, I actually have the leather vest spray painted green. I've got the Guy Gardner whole deal.
You have the assless chaps of the same color.
Can you imagine a Quagmire Green Lantern be like,
and the Steely Dan.
Nothing but dongs come out of that ring.
It's a big yellow dong.
No, seriously, as far as like the Green Lantern universe goes, when they told me that Alan Scott was going to be reintroduced as a gay character, Alan Scott is that grandfather figure in the Green Lantern universe. He really is that, like, that fatherly figure to everybody who reads the Green Lanterns. And, you know, they reintroduced him as a younger version, and, you know, at first it worked. In the first couple of panels I was reading it was like, okay, this works, and then they just do that humiliating, horrific, we're just going to kill off his boyfriend.
But really? Of course, now we don't have to commit to the decision that we've made.
Exactly.
No, certainly.
Thank
they set
much.
It up.
They were waiting for the negative press to come.
They
pandered
people.
They do not have to commit to the decisions that they've made.
That's my number one gripe with comic books, is that when they make these commitments, they have these huge, you know, these huge outlooks, and then they totally bail on the commitment by always writing out the back door.
Well, let me point out one thing that DC did right, and I think I brought this up in a previous episode, I'm sorry if I'm repeating myself, is Batwoman. Greg Rucka, J.H. Williams III, the direction they're putting Batwoman, she's gay as well, but they're never throwing it in your face. It's very subtle.
That's the reason
they're
doing it right.
Well,
though,
I'm fine with
it.
Like,
that's the thing. That's the thing. If there's,
we talked about this. We talked
if
about
if there's
the
a number
there's
of gay
the
characters.
There's the comment that matters.
The lesbian.
I'm fine with lesbian kiss.
We talked about this last time. It's pretty.
The new question is a female.
Yeah. Well, I'm not going to.
Lesbian.
both lesbian, both gay characters, but they're women.
But
when yeah, you're, think of the right when your readership is 90%
Green Lanterns for your male gay
totally
readers.
Wait a second.
Wait a second.
No, you can Cameron. You can correlate comic book readers to porn viewers. Would they rather watch lesbians or homosexuals?
That's yeah. fine. That's fine. Yeah. However,
they're under the same umbrella. I mean,
I don't
on.
Think that's the same correlation.
No, no, no. Wait, no. Well,
No. I'm saying, as a male, Dallas, I know you watch a lot of porn.
It's because
you're
married.
Would you rather watch two girls or two guys?
Well, it's clear.
No, I think I skew your data because
that's
I don't
the demographic
think
that however, DC plays to.
However, my point is, though, with Batwoman, regardless of whether she's a lesbian or not, it's subtle, okay?
Wait.
And regardless of whether she's a girl or not, it's subtle. They don't point out, look, we have a lesbian couple. We have two girls making out. They don't make a big point about it. They don't have
a big splash
page about it.
It's not a splash.
Exactly,
it's
not.
If they didn't have the one panel where Batwoman kissed whoever she kissed, would you have known she was a lesbian?
Actually, to be completely honest, yes, because I don't remember a panel where she kissed another girl. Obviously, she's gone on dates with girls. Okay, okay. The point is, though, it's implied that she's gay. And that's the thing. Is it's implied because it's subtle, and I think it's a neat thing that DC does there. I mean, it's a shame what they do anywhere else. It's a shame that they point out the Green Lantern's game, making a marketing scheme out of it. But I also just, and I'm not a fan of DC, but I want to point out that look
that it's there, but it's not.
They
it's also there, and I attribute that to the writer, to the artist, to the creative team, not so much the editor. I think that's great.
And clearly, it's working because half the people at this table didn't know Batwoman was gay.
And did half the people know that Jason Pretty Bird is the great fucking the greatest artist of the 21st century?
I didn't know that. I haven't read a comic book in years.
We're talking comics, and half the people here don't even read comics. Mel hates comics, and she's here.
That's not true.
I'm just kidding.
He's not kidding.
Now that you guys have meandered back to the gay, can I meander back to the women? Because I have one more piece to that that I thought was really interesting. An article that I...
Please go ahead.
You had your time. You hush.
Oh, man. That's
no, you only get 70% of our time.
Yeah. I get all of your time.
Freedom!
Read the Women's Podcast Act, okay?
I have one more thing that I want to add to that, because it was an article I read that kind of it linked to the same article. Marvel, in an act that I think might be going a little too far, is getting ready to release, like, Harlequin love novels for She-Hulk and Rogue. Have you guys seen that?
It's not the first time that there's been a Harlequin
novel. I've never seen that.
I'm sure there's been plenty of fan fiction.
Like,
Harley
finally
doing
34.
So, Marvel's taking She-Hulk and Rogue in the direction that DC took
Rogue?
Harley Quinn.
Leave Rogue alone.
Oh, dear God. I can only
Rogue.
Picture China
See,
and Anna Paquin right now.
I've no... I'm not a DC fan. So, I only know that they're doing... They've
Why
compared,
would you do that? That's terrible. Now I can't get that image out of my head.
She-Hulk and Rogue, China, Anna Paquin. Picture
it's a group of males. What
jerk.
Did you expect? You talk to a group of dudes and you're not surprised any of us
Yo,
are
Courtney, you have the floor.
I just want to point out they've and what's worse is they're talking about taking this Rogue book, Rogue Touch. In a
That's what he said.
And that's what I was aiming for.
Everybody loves the Rogue Touch.
Yeah, because you die at
yeah,
the end. That sounds great.
Rogue Touch.
No, they're taking it in a Twilight scheme. It's like supernatural and lovey-dovey. And
so what does she drain out of muff, or does she make love with her gloves
okay,
on?
Okay, on that note, however, if you don't mind, we're going to take a music break. We're going to clear our thoughts. We're going to take another shot, and then we have more. We got a couple more topics that we'd like to talk about. So.
We got Hurricane and MJ over here.
All right, welcome back. It's us again. We've got everybody on here, and this is a little segment I like to call 20 questions. What I'm going to do is I'm going to rifle off 20 quick questions, and we're just going to go around the table, and everyone's going to answer a different question.
Are you going to introduce some of the new people that just stepped in?
Well, yeah, but everybody just listened to a segment with them on it.
Oh, that's true.
No reintroductions needed.
All right. So here we go. First off, this is 20 questions we put together. A couple of us at work just threw them together the other day, and I want to thank James, Speedo Man, Mao, and Man With No Name for helping me out on that one. So, Matt, you're up first, buddy. Number one, what comic book character would you like to be stuck on a deserted island with?
Dr. Octopus. For no other reason other than he has metal arms.
All right.
Sounds extremely...
I love it. Number two, Don, what comic book character would you want to help raise your children?
None of them. They're all freaks, and they shouldn't be doing what they're doing. So none of them are welcome to do it with me.
Love it. Courtney, number three, what comic book character would you go camping with and why?
I'm going to say Mara. I feel like she could catch the most fish.
That's a good one. All right. All right. Craig.
Really?
Craig, what hero would you call if you were in a burning building? Don't say Human Torch.
I would call... I'd want to say Iceman just because it's practical, but I hope he stays in the building. I don't like Bobby Drake's character at all.
then this can be like, who do you hate the most that you can invite to a burning building?
I pick Iceman. Fuck him.
All right. Cameron, what hero would you call if you got laid off from your job?
Oh, God, I don't even know.
It's got to be the King.
Tony Stark.
Yeah, Tony Stark would be a really good choice.
All right, Tony Stark.
Bail me out.
Nice. Brother. All right. Al, do you have a microphone?
Right here.
All right. Where am I? What hero would you call if you were living in the Walking Dead universe?
Druna.
That's a good choice. Who's that?
The lady from Heavy Metal.
A broadsword and titties is all he needs at the end of the
world. Yeah, baby. Rookie. What hero would you call if you were stuck in an auditorium watching River Dance?
What the hell?
Because you're a short Irish guy, that was.
I did not profile these questions.
Really?
I just want you to know.
Give me the Riverdance question. Wow.
I didn't know you were gonna sit right there.
That's ethnocentric. Yeah. I would call Thing because I would want to see him Riverdance.
I like it.
How can you not want to see the?
When they remove the rubble of the building, you're dead.
I like
body,
it.
You better have a grin on your face. Like that was awesome.
All right, Matt. Who would you rather face, Lex Luthor or Dick Cheney?
Lex Luthor. Dick Cheney's the master of evil.
Don, where am I? That's not the question. Who would you rather face, Mr. Sinister or your boss?
I don't know who Mr. Sinister is, so I'd say my boss.
All right, Courtney, which superhero should have a male or female counterpart?
Now I do feel like you're profiling.
Not profiling, I swear to God.
I didn't, it was about the war.
It's in order.
Where are we going with this, Dallas?
This is a gender thing?
I think they've all had counterparts, haven't they? All the ones I read have counterparts.
I don't think Bobby Drake had a counterpart.
All right.
He died in a fire set.
actually, technically, if you jump universes, he does. Frost from DC.
Yeah, I don't read DC.
In my face. All right. Craig.
Yes.
Best or worst video game adaptation of a superhero?
Oh, there are so many.
All right, Courtney, you can answer that if you want.
So many.
Do you know the saddest thing is I really thought the Wolverine Origins one was one of the best video game adaptations. I had so much fun with that game.
Yeah, we're talking worst. I know
he
that.
Said
I love
best
that.
Or
best
worst.
Or worst.
Oh,
so best she had best, you
I
do
best
worst.
Go
oh,
worst.
I got plenty of worst. Holy shit.
I mean, you have to say Superman 64.
No way. I'm gonna close.
Have you played Ghost Rider?
I'm gonna say Batman Beyond 64.
Ooh, that was atrocious.
I never played it, but any game on the 64 that's licensed probably sucks, except for James Bond. All right,
let's not
start
this argument.
Which superhero would you trust your girlfriend with?
Earth 2 Green Lantern, because he's gay.
You're like, Aquaman, watch my girlfriend for a while.
You got it.
We're going to collect seashells.
Which superhero would you rather share a condo with?
Druna.
Oh, man.
I thought you were going to go Vampirella.
Next question for Al. Just say Druna.
Say that forever.
Hey, Al, what's 1 plus 1?
Druna.
3.
All right, Rookie. If a superhero was going to go dressed up as you for Halloween, who would be able to pull you off the best?
Oh, come on. Easy. Guy Gardner.
What's the bad guy?
I was
going to
say Dum Dum Duggan.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that's a good one, too.
Who's the bad guy in Superman? You have to say his name backwards?
Mix-a-plixel.
Mix-a-plixel.
Yeah. See that?
All right, Matt. What two heroes would make the most lopsided fight?
Probably somebody like Deadpool and who's that ridiculous duck?
Howard the Duck?
Howard the Duck.
You don't Deadpool say anything about Howard the Duck.
I think Howard the Duck can hold his own, Howard. Frankly.
I don't know. Howard the Duck's pretty strong. Don, now you can tell I'm definitely not profiling because this probably isn't the most appropriate question for you. Choose 3 characters to go drinking with. And you don't really drink.
I don't drink, so I wouldn't go.
Anybody, go.
I'll do
not
it.
Wolverine.
I'd like to drink with Captain America.
Low tolerance, he can cover for Craig.
Peter Parker. And Storm, just because I want to see her get drunk so I can take advantage of her.
No. Yeah, buddy.
Guy Gardner, Johnny Blaze, and Frank Castle.
You just want the rugged biker guy types. you already formed a posse in your head. Like, you know what? I could look good with them.
He's a gang. Okay, where am I? All right, Courtney, which superhero needs counseling the most?
The most? A lot of them deal with the...
Deadpool.
That's not counseling. That's just a night out on the town. That's who I'd want to drink with. I don't know. Can you even count Wolverine among those that need counseling?
Sure.
Desperate.
Hundreds of years of counseling, frankly.
I don't know. Wolverine in like a psych couch would be hilarious. Be like, tell me about your childhood.
I don't remember.
He could fit on a psych love seat.
I would kind of think that Scott Summers needs some psych counseling after killing Xavier, so, you know.
Is he still banging Emma?
He ain't banging nobody in prison, baby.
Oh, he's in prison?
Yeah.
Okay. Craig, which superhero would cheat at Monopoly first?
Morph.
Cameron, what is the best and worst combinations that the Wonder Twins could become?
Jada's tampon. And now the waiting game.
The best would probably be lesbian supermodels. The worst...
I was going to say peanut butter and jelly, but that's even better.
No. I'd have to say the worst would be, like, a skateboard and Al's ass.
Final question, Al, number 20. Would Thor make a good construction worker?
Who the hell said that question?
What's your answer?
Yes.
Ding, ding, ding. All right, great. Thank you very much, guys.
So much for joining us on this 50th episode. You can learn more about the show and listen to all the other shows on our website. Go to bunchofbrooks.com and click on the Cyclops. It'll take you to all of our shows with links, explanations, and while you're there, check out all our links on the sidebars. We have various ones to all of Don's projects, Al's projects, my projects. You can also find us on iTunes. Just go on iTunes and look up Two Dimension Comics. So that will wrap it up for this episode, guys. Thank you once again for joining us. And until next time, read more comics. Read more comics. More comics.